Why aren't you talking about the 50, 60, 70 million, 80 million people that are struggling to pay for anything? If you have a large body that can dole out tens of billions of dollars and there's no oversight over that thing, of course, people are going to be like, yeah, we would love to be part of that.
How can you be against the fact that your country comes first, that you look after your finances, that you look after what type of things are allowed to be sold here or not? There is so much just screaming to keep your power, to keep your influence. And then the other thing is people are so reluctant to change.
Hey, because you're in this country, you have to take a significant portion of the thing that you're working with, like the value you're bringing for this country, and we will take it and make the country better. And they haven't done that. So, Alexandra came on my channel. For those that don't know, Alexandra is one of the most awesome people I know. She is incredibly brilliant. She follows a lot of different stories very closely. She's known a lot for the work she's done around Tesla, but really, Alexandra does incredible work amongst all kinds of different phases. You don't even know. Like, she's truly one of the most incredible people I know. And one of the things that we covered when Alexandra came in 2.5 years ago, our very first conversation, which from the very get-go, we got along so freaking well, which was such a
That's wonderful. You're my brother. That's no doubt.
It was awesome. It was about ESG. And the reason why I bring up the ESG discussion was there was this sort of, from my standpoint, I was unaware of how unfair, I'm trying to use nice words here, misleading, misguided. I'm trying not to use the C word, if you know what I'm talking about. There seems to be a lot of that today.
I think is the right
term. Thank you. There was a lot of abuse about this. So basically what was happening was you were creating these very weird incentives where the companies that were truly doing good things around environmental protection and governance and, you know, all the different things that ESG stands for, they weren't really getting credit for that. And then you had companies like cigarette companies were getting really good ESG scores. Like, hey, you are such an amazing steward of the environment and governance, Mr. Cigarette Company. But Tesla, no, you're terrible. Not even though you're, you know, moving the world to transition, to sustainable energy, bad company, right? So that was like a eye-opening experience for me, because it's like, okay, wow. So you have these gigantic entities that, you know, one would think just because the place where I came from is like, you are large, and because you are large, that means you did a lot of good things, and that's why you are large, right? But that what has happened since then, this sort of like, it feels like we're an upside down world where, you tell me if I'm coming at this incorrectly, I think there has been an awakening around, hey, just because things are large doesn't mean that they're necessarily doing good things. There might be a lot of corrupt things happening. I said the word, sorry. I'll stick with it. There might be corrupt things happening at the core of certain stories that a lot of people are not aware of. And these things are actually dictating a lot of things downstream that people have no idea is actually happening, right? And I feel like if I tie it back to the last few weeks of what's been going on, what we're covering, you know, the Trump election, Doge, Elon, this chaos and hysteria that's happening around it specifically, and a lot of positive stuff too, but let's take the whole picture. To me, it feels like it's like the ESG story, like, again, but with a lot of public attention, like maximum public attention. We have reached, like, I was talking to Gally about this yesterday. We'll post the episode at some point. There's like maximum attention now on this story, whatever, the Elon arc, the government arc, the Doge arc. It's like, okay, now everybody's paying attention. And like, and the interesting thing is, like, the way people are paying attention to it is fascinating, because all the preconceived notions, all the biases from all sides are being projected on this singular story. But at the core of it is like, hey, big thing is not doing the thing it's supposed to be. That's my interpretation, right?
I don't think it's only big against small. I think it's much more structured than that. Okay. I think what happened over the last 20 years, and let me just explain why I think it's so recent. You know, As you, I'm an immigrant, and my first language was German, my second language was French, and English was my third language. So I learned English in school, and you learn a certain vocabulary. I was a year in exchange student when I was 16 in North Carolina, so I had a certain English vocabulary, didn't use it in my daily life a lot until I moved to California 11 years ago. And when you have this rupture between school English, using it a little bit, I mean, I used it in my job and all that, but it was not, you know, refreshed. I wasn't in a social life in English. I was in a sort of half business life in English, but not in a, you know, where you had all the tendency. And then you have this rupture where you live mainly in your first and second primary languages. And then you come here, you suddenly realize there are new words. There are new words that you've not seen before. And I remember there were words I had to look up and understand why they are now suddenly. And I mean, of course, there's also the whole urban dictionary and stuff that has evolved where I'm just not the right generation and I wasn't there at the right place. But so when I arrived in California, there were a couple of words I thought, this is strange. What's a stakeholder, right? I knew shareholder, but now suddenly stakeholder. And then the other thing I realized is with my five children, them going then through American education, which I love. I still think it was the right thing to get my kids out of Europe and to the United States. I'm not only just criticizing, but you realize how the focus of education is completely different of academia here in the United States than in Europe. And then you see how it works on the different profiles of your children, right? I have one child, our number four, who is completely in it. She loves it. She wants to become a teacher. And I'm not criticizing that, but I just realize how they've taken over, right? How they've taken over her thinking, her everything. So when I started getting into Tesla in 2020, the first thing I understood quickly was that their credit rating was no good, right? Because that's where I come from. I worked for 7 years at Moody's. I had my own rating agencies. I understood very quickly what was happening here. And rating agencies are to the core corrupt. I mean, it all looks transparent and whatever, but what it is you pay, you get a good rating, right? And that's always been the case, even when I was still working there.
It's like J.D. Power.
Exactly. It's very nicely, you know, dressed up, but that's what it is at the core. So we started, you know, pushing them and shaming them on X and whatever. And in the end, we got what we wanted, which was investment grade ratings from both S&P and Moody's for Tesla. But in that course of looking at their ratings, I suddenly developed that since I left them, so I left the financial markets in 2007, I'd left Moody's in 2003, they'd come up with this whole new range of ratings, which were ESG ratings. So before the two of us even talked about it, I realized that my former employer had now this whole new field of judging whether people were socially acceptable, because that's what it is. And I mean, that goes against my core belief. What people should be, you know, it drives me insane that there should be institutions, be it rating agencies, be it media, be it stakeholders, because that's what they use, the word, that can judge how socially acceptable you are, what type of behavior, what type of curriculum, what type of upbringing, what type of race, what type of whatever is good compared to not good, that those are, you know, institutionalized values. And that drives me profoundly crazy, because people can be very good, no doubt about it. People, I don't think they're like 100% perfect people, and I don't think they're 100% evil people. But in a range of stuff, people just, you know, do things right or wrong, and you have to individually understand why they went there. It may have been wrong, it may have been right, right? But putting these people into these clusters, and then starting to do favoritism for stuff they like, made me really think, how is this all structured? Where does the money come from? Why are there suddenly subjects popping up in Europe that I never heard before after I heard of them 6 or 12 months prior in California or in the US? How is this whole information flow going? And I think we're actually only now starting to understand what's happening. With this US 8 Dodge initiative, suddenly comes out how stuff was financed in Morocco, in Europe, in Asia, in I don't know what, that were, you know, transgender or they were whatever. So you had this core of people working on the ideologies they wanted to promote. And I don't even want to criticize it. I'm not believing in those ideologies, but that's not even the point. There are people who selected what was on their goodie list. And that goodie list then got paid all over the world to prosper. And that's just wrong. Why is it wrong? Because it's our money. It's our taxpayer money. And there is nobody overlooking this. And so what we had started to, you know, kick the can down the road with our ESG discussions, which I thought were very good and on point. And I'm really glad, because you don't hear much ESG investment anymore. Because that was exactly the step when they went too far with their ESG stuff. Starting to impose on the BlackRocks and other financial institutions that they now had to make their financial decisions based on their ESG rules, right, that they put in place. And that's why the rating agencies that jumped on that train. And then that's completely gone. The rating agencies have given up on ESG. There is none anymore. The BlackRocks have said, well, not talking about it anymore. The labels on the funds have gone. And so now it's a little bit about social responsible, but I mean, it's diluted. You see it fading away under eyes. So they have lost a lot of power, because they were really smart in building it up in the media, building it up with these institutions that are considered reputable. I think they're worse and worse. And I hope that Dodge just, you know, makes it all explode, because that's what they deserve. And also infiltrated our judges. You know, the issues we have, and I don't know whether you want to go there, and I don't need to talk about it because I talk about it all the time, but
we can go anywhere.
Thank you. Just this morning, the X account called Leave Delaware published that for 3 years now, Delaware has a DEI mission. So recruitments are all DEI driven. And that's just, I'm done with this. People should be recruited not because of their skin color or whatever. It should be on merit. It should be on very objective things. In France, we're to the point that they don't even put the name anymore. No, of course, no picture on CVs, so that there can't be any, you know, influence of any privileges in either way. I don't want somebody white or brown or whatever. I want the best brain, right? Or the toughest worker, or the best chef, right? I'm done with this whole crap of you need a woman or you need a person of color. No, don't do that. Give us the best ones, but give everybody fair chances to be the best ones.
Yeah. It's I think what for me, hearing you talk through all of that, right? And the one thing that you brought up was around the real crazy thing here is that we are finding things with the U.S. taxpayer money that's being funded that whatever the ideology is, it's like it's our taxpayer money and it's going to places that it shouldn't be going to. I get that the United States is a representative democracy. Like, I get it. Like, we put people in charge and those people decide what to put in place in our behalf, right? But like, have we done any work in the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years to get people caught up on where the money is actually going? Mm-hmm. Like, do we fully understand as a public what's happening? Like, has the media done any work to tell us, like, this is where it's going?
Oh, because right? They get paid by it. They
isn't
that
get, crazy?
I mean, did you see that? I mean,
the political thing and
what they did, exactly. What they just did is they knocked at the first administration, which obviously was USAID. I'm not saying that it wasn't easy to find that one, but I mean, they found it. They and do you hear that public outrage? I mean, why are these people screaming? All of America, every American taxpayer, and even those that are not taxpayers but in the United States, should be happy, because all this money that is not being funneled anymore to stuff that nobody oversaw will be available for other things, either for tax cuts or for better use. And so I can't believe there are people screaming. And then when people say, well, but they may undo too much, well, then undo too much and then you redo, right? If you have this attitude, oh, I can't touch it because maybe a little bit of it is good. No, cut it down and then see what's left and see what's really needed and then do that. And I mean, nobody is saying that USAID should not exist. And I had all these comments like, oh my God, you grew up in Germany. Germany would be nothing if USAID was not there. That's true. That's true. There was really good stuff done with USAID. And USAID as such will not exist anymore. But part of that budget will now be of the Department of State. And the Department of State, I think, is perfect, because the Department of State has embassies in every country or consulate. They know much better what is really happening on site. And for them being in charge of money that goes to other nations that are in need seems to me a much better use, using these diplomats that we pay that are on site, that, you know, that's their job, that they can understand what is needed, rather than having this completely independent agency that nobody oversaw and millions and billions thrown in all directions.
Yeah, it was an insane scope creep. I mean, that's like if you've lived in any sort of environment or worked in any sort of environment where a large body is not given proper transparency and they're not put in a situation where they have to be responsible to shareholders or stakeholders or whatever. Like the people that are there that are supposed to benefit from the thing they're doing, if they're not getting transparent, like things that are saying, hey, this is what we're working on, what's going to happen is people are going to eventually see, wow, that thing has a lot of money, right? And then just what happens is over time, and I'm not saying these people are going into it with corrupt motives, but you just follow the incentives. If you have a large body that can dole out tens of billions of dollars and there's no oversight over that thing, of course, people are going to be like, yeah, we would love to be part of that.
Time.
And even though,
of course,
exactly, it's party time. And it's like, exactly, they might even be going into it with the right motives, you know?
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And it's the same crowd that on the other side says, oh, DEI, oh, ESG. Oh,
so frustrating.
We need stakeholders to talk about it. So on the other side, right, when it comes to cutting the space for Tesla or anybody else, right, they're overzealous to be procedural and want to have these instances that, you know, give their opinion, are respected and whatever. And on their side, it's like, don't look too close, please.
Yeah. It's so frustrating. It's ultimately so frustrating, right? Because it's like, from my standpoint, you know, if I view it from the American taxpayer, like this is ultimately like, this is the right angle to view it through, is like the American taxpayer. What has the American taxpayer done? What is it made up of? Okay, there is 330 million people, roughly, I don't know, call it 50% of the country, 60%, whatever it is. They pay a substantial amount of federal income tax. At least 10% of their paychecks go into the federal government. Okay, and those people, 50% of the country lives paycheck to paycheck, meaning that there are a lot of people that work really hard every single day, and they can barely make ends meet. And then once $1,000 surprise check ends up in their things, like, oh shit, my car broke down, I need $1,000. They cannot do it. Okay, so by default, a lot of those people, a significant percentage of their paycheck is going to the federal government. And the federal government for the last 20, 30, 40 years has just said, fuck you. That's literally what they've
more
said to those
and more
people.
And more. Print more.
How is that not the story? That's the thing that drives me nuts. Like it's how is that? So when I view it from the it is the story. But the thing that really frustrates me, and this is maybe I should stop doing this, is that I've been going out of my way to see the other side as much of it as I can. Maybe I shouldn't do it as much, but the last 2 to 3 days, I'm like, okay, let me expose myself to the people that are like, this Doge thing is terrible. Elon is terrible. Trump is terrible. Maybe I have a blind spot. Maybe I'm too biased. Everybody's got biases. Maybe there's something going on where I'm like, wow, this is like really, really bad. Really, really bad. It's like, okay. So the biggest thing that I get from that story is like, well, the person that's doing it is doing it for evil purposes, and thus it should be stopped. This Elon guy with the Doge thing is super illegal, is unconstitutional, is the worst thing ever. This is a crazy power grab. Okay, so you may feel that. Why aren't you talking about the 50, 60, 70 million, 80 million people that are struggling to fucking pay for anything, and then the government has been just raping their dollars? Why is that not the fucking story? Like, when I hear those people talk about that shit, it's like,
well, I tell you
crazy.
Why it's not the story. Well, I tell you why it's not the story, because that really, I completely hear you. That really goes against their playbook, right? Why did I never vote for the left? And it is what it is. And I'm not saying I'm a friend of the right all the time. I sometimes hate politics so badly, and I wish, you know, we would have third party or whatever.
I hate that I'm talking about this.
Yeah, me too. The left to me, and that's true in Europe and that's true here in the United States, has no respect for the individual. I feel they are either overcompensating with overcaring rather than, you know, good initiative help. You know, it's like making people dependent on subsidies, which I think is not the right way to do it. Help people get better. Don't get people addicted to subsidies. That is, for me, a huge thing. And the second thing is, I feel whenever I talk to these people, it is much more about their power grab and what they want to regulate and how they want that procedure in place and how they want this to be done than about the good cause of it. And it really drives me, you know, insane and sad, because the right has often such a bad image of being, you know, these capitalists who exploit the poor people and whatever. And it has completely turned. If you looked at the electorate of Trump now, he actually has those people that live paycheck to paycheck. This was the traditional Democrat voters, but they are completely disgusted. They feel the Democrats have done nothing for them. And if you look at it, I can't find much that was done, right? So they feel like they need somebody who fights for them. And this America First agenda, I mean, who can be against that? How can you be against the fact that your country comes first, that you look after your finances, that you look after what type of things are allowed to be sold here or not? The American goods are so heavily tariffed when they get into the European Union and when they get into China. Why would we not put tariffs on ours? And by the way, the best example is they were screaming all through the Trump one presidency, and then Biden came and those tariffs stayed in place. So when we have this discussion with people on X going, oh, these tariffs, I always go, so why didn't Biden stop them in 2020? He became president. He stopped so many other things. Why did they keep for the whole 4 years those Trump tariffs? So you see that there is so much hypocrisy in this whole thing. There is so much just screaming to keep your power, to keep your influence. And then the other thing is, people are so reluctant to change. They just like how it is.
I think that's the biggest thing.
To be able to foresee what will be in 6 months and 12 months. It gives them this fake feeling of security. And they don't want anything to change. Well, at the moment, things are changing. And they're changing at a speed. You know, some evenings I have the feeling I have to get back to the news because I must have missed half of it because there's so much of it. It's crazy. And I have to say that the work that Trump and Elon did between November and January to prepare all this, because usually this stuff happens, you know, over years and years and years, and now in not even a month. I mean, with the 11th of February, we're taping this, so it's been just 3 weeks, exactly 3 weeks. It's just enormous, enormous. You know, and in some subjects, I actually don't agree with them. Let me give you one. And I know we'll get a lot of comments on it, but that's good. You need comments. That's wonderful. So one subject I really don't agree is this story of transgenders not getting a passport of their chosen sex. I think this is
completely, that's weird. That's
I
weird
know,
as fuck.
I know. Yeah. I think this is just, you know, making
taking it too
difficult
far.
For people, exactly. For people who have an issue, but this is a very personal thing. And then once they've made up their mind, the gender they want to be, well, be it. Right. This is, you know, maybe it is a story between them and their doctor, but this is certainly for me not a story between the federal state saying you don't get papers if you don't say the gender of your birth. I just think that there's stuff that I'm like, and I get it. I get it that they went much too far. And I'm the first one to acknowledge that with influencing very young children into having to think about what gender they are and whether they want to change gender.
Yeah, but now they can't take it the other way.
Exactly. So don't go from one extreme to that you can't have papers. I mean, this is completely silly.
Yeah, 100%. The two that really stick out to me is like shipping U.S. citizens to El Salvador federal prisons. That to me is the dumbest idea I've ever heard in many different ways.
Unconstitutional. Completely
unconstitutional, number one. Number two, you're literally just selling people to lower prisons and you're basically saying, well, even though you may have done a terrible thing, you know, we're still going to say, okay, just whatever, just leave. It will save 90% of the cost in federal prison. No, that's your U.S. citizen. Own it. Own the U.S. citizen. Like, even if you view it from an inhuman way, that's your data. Own that shit. It's your shit. So that drives me nuts. The whole Gaza thing blows my mind. Like, I know the Israel-Palestine thing is going to, that's a hot topic issue. Buying Gaza, whatever. Like, I'm just going to say, I do not understand it whatsoever. I'm going to set that aside. And there's other things too that they do, right? But here's the thing, like if I think about like from the last 3 weeks perspective, if you're somebody like this is my worldview, this is my viewpoint, immigrant family, we came to the States in 1999. My dad was able to get a work visa on the last couple days of being here. by being sponsored, which was an amazing thing. Very lucky. My parents had to fight tooth and nail to ensure that they can have a house. 2008 came through, and it was a horrific time for my family. We almost lost a house. We've had to do a lot of things to ensure that we can survive in this country, work as hard as we possibly can. And because of all the lessons I learned through all that hardship, I've been able to make something of myself and have a family and have a wife and be able to take care of the people that I take care of, right? But I did that through really hard work, and I did that through doing things the right way and trying to be as fair as possible and trying to treat people as humanly as possible. And this whole time, the social contract has been with the United States, hey, because you're in this country, you have to take a significant portion of the thing that you're working with, like the value you're bringing for this country, and we will take it and make the country better. And they haven't done that. And that's the thing that really pisses me off. That's the thing that really pisses everybody off. And the people that don't focus on that, and again, I shouldn't be doing this. Like, I shouldn't be focusing on the people that don't focus. We should focus on the right things that are happening. I'm trying my hardest to understand the other side, and I'm having a really, really, really hard time outside of Elon bad. Literally the only thing. And I try to understand, and I can't.
Yeah, and let me just quickly touch on immigration. So, you know, I work in immigration, so I try to really, you know, go first principles here. Since 1990, so that's now 30 years. And it's not as if 35 years is not a long time. It's a long time. It's nearly two generations. Nothing really changed in immigration law. Okay. So 1990, the law became that every year, approximately 1.4 million green cards were handed out. Those 1.4 million, 1.2 million were for family reunion, marriages, children, parents, brothers, sisters. Then there were 50,000 for the lottery, because every year we do a lottery where people can participate all over the world. And then only 140,000 are on merit. So when your father got a work visa that then transformed later into a green card, he was one of those 140,000 of the 1.4 million. So only 10% of green cards are on merit. I understand that there is a need for family green cards. I'm not saying against that. But that number of 140,000 per year for a nation of 330 million is much too small. It's incredibly too small. So it goes in five categories, EB1, 2, 3, 4, 5. EB5 is the million investment. So I'm not even going to talk that. EB4 is journalists and very special professions. And so EB1 is self-sponsored because you're extraordinary. You're looking at one. That was me.
Yeah, nice.
And then you got EB2 and 3, which are workers. So in each of these categories, you only have 40,000. So only 40,000 bachelor plus degree people per year can get a green card, and only 40,000 other people that don't have a bachelor's degree can get a green card per year. That is just much too small. Much too small. And neither left nor right has done anything about it in 35 years. Okay. So yeah. I know Trump is working on this. I know Trump wants to increase this number of 140,000 to maybe tenfold. I have no idea, but I'm just saying something, right? He doesn't want to take anything of the family stuff away. He hates the lottery, but be it, right? But the main thing in this all is that we just don't have enough merit-based immigration. So instead of communicating that, on which I know he works, he's communicating all the rest, right? He's communicating, throwing out people. And I mean, I hear horror stories every day of people who don't deserve to be thrown out, and now they're in detention and whatever. It's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, and I understand that, you know, securing the border was important. Getting criminals out is important and all that. But you just have the feeling that the communication around immigration is not where it should be. I just now took 3-4 minutes to explain it. I think if you explain it this way, nobody can be against it. As long as you tell people, we still will have family immigration, but we need to increase the merit-based people. And to be able to increase the merit-based people, we have to clean up first what's here and currently shouldn't be here. Fair enough. But they don't do that. They don't talk about it a way so that people can understand what's happening.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that. I can totally see that. I think from my perspective is the Doge stuff has taken up so much of my like bandwidth from that stuff. Is like I've missed the other stuff. I've sort of missed the other things that they're talking about. And this is where I need to do a better job. It's just that whole story is just driving me nuts. Anyway, I'm gonna try to move off of it here. So talk to me a little bit about the things you've been working on with the OpenAI stuff. Because I saw you were how well versed are you right now on this Elon buying OpenAI thing, because that's
not good enough, but okay. I can tell you where I am. I didn't really follow OpenAI because, you know, it's just one of those tech stuff that, I mean, my topics are much more finance, corporate governance and all that. And so that Sam Altman is not of my liking. I mean, I heard the guy in the Congress hearing. I just thought, he is creepy. But you know, it didn't really go much further than that until about last week. So that's about a week ago, so I knew Elon had a law case going in California, asking that the transformation of the non-profit for a for-profit should be stopped, right, of OpenAI. So you have to know there are two companies that are called OpenAI. OpenAI non-profit, which Elon was a founder of, which holds at the moment all the assets. So the question is, how much is that worth? And then they created an OpenAI LLC, which is a for-profit. And what Altman is trying to do is slush the assets from the non-profit to the profit for to be determined price. I'm getting to that in a moment. So that becomes the other one becomes a shell of nothing. The non-profit would have, that was his promise, 25% of the full profit. But that's the moment in time where we are, right? Where we're about getting closer for him being able to get all the assets and put it. Why is that important? Because the non-profit has a profit gap. A profit cap. So every year, once they are at that profit cap, the rest has to be reinvested for the coming years. It can't be dividends. It can't be paid out. It can't be whatever. So it's all at the moment hindering him of becoming immensely rich. And so last week, in that court case, a federal judge denied the injunction from Elon to halt this whole thing. Elon wanted it to hold, and the federal judge said, I don't see why we need to hold it. She didn't rule yet that this is done, but she just said, I'm not giving an injunction, right? Which would be an immediate halt. And I thought, oh my God, here we go again. I mean, I've just spent too much time reading about Elon cases the last month and years. And so I had that. I mean, read it in 5 minutes. Wasn't really, you know, it's not my main concern, but I wasn't happy about it. And then came yesterday that Wall Street Journal article. I hang it. I mean, one day they're going to call me out because I copy all these articles and post them. But until they call me out, that's what I do. That's how we roll. So that article was extremely well written. I usually always curse on the media, but that article was extremely well written. No surprise, because it was actually Elon and his lawyer who fed the Wall Street Journal. I mean, you could read it at every line that this was not. I mean, I'm not saying the journalists didn't do their work, but they were obviously guided and told what should be written, maybe even re-edited by the Elon people. And so they explain that they are now a consortium of people, including Elon, led by Elon. So I don't know how much of it would be Elon, that want to purchase the non-profit. Now, this is a problem. This is a problem. I mean, that I understood very quickly that this was really smart. Remember, so we had this discussion that Altman wanted to suck the assets from the nonprofit to the profit at a price that he determined. The price that was whispered around was 40 billion. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the question was, why 40 billion? Well, that was 40 billion. The other side, we had the last capital raise from them in December, where all these assets were valued at 154 billion. Okay, so you had 40 billion that Sam Altman seemed to want to put on the table to pull it down, and you had this capital raise, whatever. But you also have currently SoftBank, who is considering investments, and so it's whispered that SoftBank values it at 300 billion. Okay, so we have all these prices, 40 billion, 154, which is the only one that really has transactions happening at that level, and then 300 billion that are whispered.
And sorry, this is for the entirety or just the nonprofit side?
Well, this is for the assets of the nonprofit side, the which is everything. Nonprofit. But which is everything? This is what OpenAI is about.
And all that stuff.
Yeah. Everything. Good. Well, everything. Pull it out and just have the shell up there. And so here comes Elon, Jogan Jodong, on his white horse. You see it? And he goes, here I am with my friends, 7.4. That is screwing, excuse me, my English, Sam Altman, because now his 40 billion is gone. Right? He cannot say, I'm sucking it down for 40 billion, because you have somebody who says, Because you can always say, well, the 154 or maybe even the 300 billion are for partial investments. That is for people, you know, who when you invest 6 billion, well, you have to give it a price. You want those six, whatever. But saying I buy all of it at 97.4 and if somebody else comes around and says more, I go even higher. I go higher than the next person comes. I give you blank check that whatever the highest bid is, I come higher. So that's it for Sam, because Sam now is in his LLC saying, I want this whole thing down here at 40 billion. Well, he can't anymore. He can't even say 97.4 anymore. He can't even say more anymore because the other ones are coming as well. So again, I don't think a minute Elon wants to buy this. Who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. But I think he cornered him where it's really painful because, you know, it's one thing. And the other thing is that this last capital raise in December at 154 billion was under the premise that this whole transaction, sucking it into the LLC, would be done by end of 2026. Well, now we're stuck. Now we're stuck in court because Elon and his lawyers immediately filed these to the attorney generals in both California and Delaware. Why both? Well, because OpenAI is incorporated in Delaware and OpenAI is obviously functioning out of California. So now the courts are involved. And now, I mean, at least the timeline of Sam Altman as it completely exploded. It's something that he thought he was on good track of being able to do. Well, now he has to deal with this.
So, and it was interesting watching him on the interview this morning with, I think it was in France for having an AI summit or something. And there was an interview with him. He looked visibly frustrated for the first time I've ever. Can I play the video?
Please, I didn't see it.
Yeah, because it was very telling because Sam is usually very like, you know, he tries to come across very like, you know, even keel, very, you know. Like, hey, listen, like, it is what it is. I'm very disappointed, but, you know, we'll keep pushing forward. But then he threw out some bombs. Give me 1 second here. Let me find it, because I think it's going to be a very important little thing for us to talk through. Looking. Who posted it? Was it Sawyer? So that's one video. There were two. All right. Can you see that?
I don't hear him yet.
Can you hear that? You know, it is interesting because he does sort of like he does, you know, give credence to the whole thing. It's like, hey, listen, like he is trying to fuck him. Like Elon is trying to fuck Sam. Right. But then Sam is very visibly frustrated by this. Very, very physically. And this is the first time I've seen him like he like threw a jab. His whole life is insecure. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa.
Sure.
Like, OK,
sure.
I get like I totally get being frustrated.
Yeah. And you and your sister and you and your mother. And-
yeah.
I don't want to get into that, Sora, but I have to say, I read that Wall Street Journal article. I was laughing out loud because it was just so visible what they're trying to do. And it was genius, right? Because he now has an issue. He cannot purchase those assets anymore at 40 billion. That's gone. So people were asking me why 97.4? Well, there are a couple of theories. One, I read it that the 97.4 billion would be for the entirety. 100%. There are people who are saying the 97.4 would be for 51%. I don't know that, but let that be. But if you take the 1 billion, which was the valuation at the last capital raise, and if you take his 40 billion and you add these two together and divide by two, you get to 97.4. Exactly. Mm. So I think they just took that midpoint. And so because this will go in front of a judge and they will say, how did you come to that? And they will say, well, AI is so complicated to value. So we took those small investors. I mean, they were huge investors, but small amount capital raise, whatever. We took his price of 40 billion and we said, well, let's go for the middle. But again, dear judge, if there's anybody coming higher, we go higher.
Yeah. Huh. And all of this is born out of Elon feeling like Sam screwed him. Like it seems like all of this, like right, wrong, whatever it is, I think this is all from Elon putting in money into something that maybe he perceived as, hey, Sam, like we're going to do this open. And then when it was clear it shouldn't be going open, then it's like, okay, well, let me take it. And then Sam's like, well, I don't think that's the right thing. He's like, okay, cool. I'll keep supporting you guys. And then when Sam was like, okay, well, I'm going to chart it this way with the for profit, Elon's like, okay, whoa, all right, this is not going to work. And ever since then, it's
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something between the two of them. I also think there were a couple of episodes I don't understand. Again, I have always the feeling in this whole game, there are so many layers that I don't hear. I just can interpret the ones I understand. But I didn't understand why Trump, who is obviously so fond of Elon, announced Stargate standing next to Sam Altman. That was like, ooh, I don't think that's going down nicely, right? Larry, Sam Altman, it just gave me this vibe of there's something wrong here. I may be off, but didn't resonate correctly with me. Well, I just had to, because I mean, this is a project where so many investors should put money and the federal state, the federal government wants to support, right? So if the federal government supports Sam Altman, then Elon with his law cases is going nowhere, right? If Sam Altman has the support of Trump for all this, I mean, it could be, you know how Trump is a showman. It could be that Trump just said, oh, great, I can announce $500 billion investment, or let's do this, where are the cameras, right? With Trump, you never know how many seconds it took to stand in front of the camera and whether it was thought through.
So true.
True, right? So you just feel like, did Trump get screwed around? Was Sam Altman really pulling nicely the strings to be there standing next to him? Because he must know that drives Elon crazy. He must know that. So there's so many stuff that I don't understand yet in this whole story. But the other thing I was thinking, why, you know, who will buy TikTok? Because TikTok, I never had TikTok. I have not much information about it. But TikTok will be a really good source of video content, right? So if you're working towards AGI, I think TikTok will give you some sources if you don't have another social media platform. So the Googles of this world don't need this, and I don't think Elon needs it, but there will be players who would be, you know, happy to have access to all of this. So I feel there are layers to this whole thing, to this whole chess game, that are enormous. And yesterday, I just feel he did a really good move. It's not chess math yet, but it was a good one.
It was a good move for okay, so and here's the thing that like gets me, like, as I think through this, is like, we're definitely in a time where, like, to your point, there's so many players trying to jockey for a position to get the thing necessary for artificial general intelligence. The data is the gold mine, and everything with an AI player will be a chess match to try and get there first. And it's very obvious that everyone is going as fast as humanly possible, right?
Correct.
Isn't this what we're all afraid of?
Yeah. And isn't it that that's where you want to make sure we have serious, honest players, right? And not people that screw us over. Because
do you think Sam is honest?
He doesn't give me that feeling, but I'm obviously biased through what I hear from Elon, because I you know, Elon knows him, I don't know him, so I'm clearly biased. But the one thing I do know is I trust Elon. I mean, I've watched this guy now for 5 years, ups and downs, worst moments and good moments, and I just feel he is, does everything right? No. I think there were some, you know, moments where he really shot himself in the foot, and sometimes us Tesla shareholders were back holding for it. But you know, overall, he gives me by far the best vibes of all this world. I was also thinking last night, how must Microsoft feel? Because currently Microsoft is the ATM machine for OpenAI, right? How must they feel? Because what you have to understand, so at the moment we have this nonprofit on the top, right? The nonprofit, Sam Altman doesn't have any parts of it. None. It's a hybrid structure of a lot of people, but not him. So he is one of the, I don't remember, is it 7 or 10 board members? But that's it. And he's the CEO of it. That's it. But he doesn't have any shares. He obviously wants shares. So it was at one moment speculated it would be 7% or up to 10% of the full profit once that is slushed through. But at the moment, he does not. So for him, it's also about, you know, being ultra rich or not being ultra rich here. This is the horse he's sitting on. There are not 10,000 other. It's not like Elon, who has, you know, SpaceX and Tesla and 4 other companies and sitting next to the president 24 hours a day and whatever. His horse is OpenAI, and there is this guy that just annoys him again and again and again and again.
Yeah, man. I'm almost wondering, like, so Sam gets no money from OpenAI whatsoever?
Well, he pretends he has even no salary. He is just such a poor little man.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is the thing that that's very interesting that's going on right now in this world is like there's such an obvious arms race, and everybody, even I saw the speech by JD Vance on in France as well, or that AI summit that they were doing, which was sort of like, it was fascinating watching a politician talking about AI in a much better way than I'm used to from politicians. Like, yeah. Usually they don't really understand
because
the
he's
technology.
A VC, right? I mean, he knows what is. Yeah,
he understands it deeply, right? Yeah, I really hope all of this, like, to me, it feels very messy right now. I think this is the thing that I'm like, even if that move was smart, right? It just feels like it's really, really messy. But then it's also like, okay, maybe I haven't been long enough to watch everything of this magnitude unfold in the past. And this is how it always goes. This is just what happens. Is
also,
that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement. And also, I mean, Elon is never aware how many targets he already has on his back, and he just put an even bigger one on his back. I don't think Sam Altman was ever as motivated to get rid of Elon as now. So, and again, I'm just saying that because I really feel like that, and I often get yelled at it for saying it. If you're a Tesla shareholder and this is too much for you, for heaven's sake, look for another stock to invest, because this can go on for months, right? This can influence the stock. So if your Tesla stock holding is for 2030, you shouldn't care. I mean, you know fundamentally where this company is going and how strong it's going to perform. All these intermediary episodes, they're of a violence that we, you know, usually don't see. And it will all play out in the one single public stock that there is out there to play it out, which is Tesla, right? It doesn't matter to SpaceX, it doesn't matter to Neuralink, it doesn't matter to a boring company, but it does matter to Tesla stock. So when people say to me, oh, you have to tell him to stop. No, I'm not going to tell him anything. I mean, who would he be to listen to me? But the second thing is, you as a Tesla shareholder should ask yourself, if this is too much, and it's not a shame game or whatever, it's just, it can be too much. Certain people need to have a certain security in a stock, right? That's why there are different stocks. That's why there are different investment profiles. If this is too much, I think this is the moment to really consider going out, because it's this is not going to stop tomorrow. He's going to be in Dodge for quite a while. There will be a lot of people upset with him now. He has Sam Altman clearly upset with him as well. And not that that wasn't the case before, but I think it's just, you know, taken on a completely other role. There are still four cases in Delaware that have to be judged. There are still so many things where Elon has little influence to win it. And so this is going to be a rough couple of months. Additionally to the fact that, you know, with new product rollout and old products expiring, this is going to be not a perfect year in terms of car deliveries. There are not bot deliveries yet. So this is going to be a really stretchy year.
Yeah, it feels like any time, and just like having watched his arc for as long as I have, since 2012, 2013, anytime he achieves a massive win, he has to take a bigger thing. The guy's just addicted to pain. Like, he just
you're right, and us with it. I agree.
Yeah.
I feel when I
We're
see
dumb.
Myself, I feel like, oh my God, I said that 2 years ago, I said that last year, and here I am again.
Yeah, it's each time the stakes get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. I think
now it's America.
Yeah, it is America, and it's like, okay, so Elon's track record is anytime he takes something like this on, he does end up winning. Right, I think that's without a doubt, right? Like, you just look at every arc, like,
no doubt.
Bank, you know, PayPal with banking before he was kicked out, you know, and he learned his lesson there. Boom, he was disrupting banking. Tesla with the EV, self-driving, reusable rockets, social media, internet. Every time, it's like, giant bet, win. Giant bet, win. Giant bet, win. Giant bet, win. It's like, he doesn't have a losing record from that, right?
No. Giant bet, win. More giant bet, win.
Yeah, exactly.
Giant bet.
And the path is always chaotic, painful, wacky, yeah, insane. Yeah, you're trying to figure out, like, what the fuck is this guy doing?
I know,
like,
but you know what? Yeah. Honestly, even my pain level gets better, because I remember when we were at 100, I tell this story much too often, but still, we're at 100, I was to the point of not sleeping at night, right? And I said, you know what? This is it. You're not going to ruin your health and your life for a stupid stock. I mean, where are we, right? And, yeah. And then I, you know, so in that evening I fell asleep and I thought, okay, tomorrow I'm going to sell it all and I'm going to go back in my diversified world and it's all going to be fine and I'm not going to watch it anymore, right? And I woke up I had sleep this night, but I still fell asleep or whatever. Woke up at 4 o'clock and I thought, what's this? Come on, you believe in this company. You know what they can do. You know where they're going. You're not going to get distracted. And that was it. And from that moment on, my tolerance for pain.
Yeah.
Fine. He just throws this stuff out. And I'm like, okay, here we go again. It's going to shake out some short-term Tesla investors. It's okay. It's fine for them. It's fine for everybody else. Just, you know, eyes on the target. All good.
I really think that's such an interesting thing, because I very much connect with that. And I think the reason why I am so, I guess, I don't know, like, what's the right word that I'm looking for here? Numb. I think the reason why I'm so numb to this whole thing, like following it, it's like, okay, like now it's clear, like if there's a part of the population or a part of the whatever that's like, yo, if you think anything about this is good, or anything about this is good for the future or whatever, you must be insane. You must be a terrible person, blah, blah, blah.
That's
right.
True.
I've seen this a million times.
And you know what, Farzad?
Yeah.
You're right. And I think another person that's numb to the pain now is Elon. Because, you know, when we had this stupid discussion about what sign he made with his arm at the inauguration party, I think he couldn't care less. You know, anybody who was not numb to pain anymore would have come out, you know, done a video, explained whatever. I mean, he did a couple of short tweets, but they were more to have fun with it than anything. I feel for his mom. I mean, Mae Musk is taking so much hate on Instagram, and it really gets to her. And, you know, she published, I think yesterday or the day before, that her personal assistant did some posts on it, because, I mean, they must have that discussion all the time, because it must be painful. And I understand that as a mother, I understand that as a woman, I understand that. And as somebody who is not numb to that pain level yet, right? But he is really numb to the pain. He just keeps on rolling.
Yeah. I think a lot of that, like for me, it was my time at Tesla was like the honer. And I think this is one of the main reasons why I'm so willing to continue covering the story, even through all the chaos. And that's why I go out of my way to see what the opposite side is saying. It's because it's like, okay, I really want to understand the full picture of what's going on here. I really want to understand the full picture of what, like, this is. What's happening in today's age will be remembered forever. Like, that's without a shadow of a doubt. This is a historical moment we're living through right now. Regardless of what you think of it, history is being made actively for the last 20 years because of a singular individual who is batshit crazy. Who is a batshit crazy person, right?
Yes, but
isn't that fascinating?
Who's honoring you at me? Twasen? Crazy. Sometimes I pinch myself and then, oh my God, he's reading my post. Or when he reposts yours, I mean, isn't this just absolutely wonderful? We're a little part of this absolutely fascinating story. And I love it.
Yeah. It's very fun in a very unique way that you feel like you're at the front of trying to understand what is happening. The hardest thing to do is like trying to be 100% objective, right? And this is like one of the challenges that you know, I'm trying to take on myself, like this during this whole time, is like, how can I be 100% objective without losing sight of the fact that there are good things happening here? And this is what the media landscape does today, is that it makes it very difficult for an individual to feel like there are good things happening, because anything that doesn't happen the way it's supposed to, it's turned into, this is the worst thing of all time, evil. True. Like, it becomes extreme, right? It gets made extreme very, very quickly. And I think as people like in the media, that's like the challenge of today. Is like, how does one remain objective while ensuring that the thing that is actually happening is the thing that's happening that's going to shape the next 5 to 10 years? And what does that outcome look like, right? Is that a positive outcome or a negative? Yeah.
So one technique I use is when I discuss with people who have another opinion, happening every day now, I always, you know, look whether their arguments are fear-mongering, whether they are trying to insinuate that, you know, something is changing and it's frightening. Because if it's that, the argument is not valid. It's not, because there may be maybe a fear that, but that you can't even quantify it, that you should stop making the change. That's not a valid argument. If there's a valid argument that is not fear, I'm most happy to listen. But if it's just this fear-mongering sensational thing where, and lots of people jump on that, I understand that, but But that's not something that works with me. I'm not jumping into and giving in when somebody tells me fume.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great advice. And it's just such a crazy time. It's such a crazy time. It's like never in a million years would I have thought that, you know, when I started with the YouTube channel, like I'd be talking about this stuff. It's like, yo, here's some knowledge. Oh, this is fun. The technology is great. And then you're just watching this, like, the story
but continue. Nobody, I love talking about this more than with you. I really appreciate it. I do. Because I feel that, you know, we're making actually progress, both of us, by talking about it.
100%. Yeah, it brings clarity. You know, and the whole reason why we record is like, hey, like everybody else check it out. Like we're trying to figure out what the fuck's going on.
Exactly.
We're trying to figure out what's happening here too, right? It's I think like for me, it's encouraging people to continually step outside of their comfort zone and trying to like force yourself to be uncomfortable during these situations to me is what really, this was a crucial learning lesson for me. It's like when you feel discomfort about whatever's happening, if you feel discomfort about like your preconceived biases, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Like it or not, and this is the reality of the situation. Elon Musk now has so much influence and power that his decision making at some point will impact the future for most people. That's just true. Self-driving cars are going to change transport. Exactly.
Worldwide.
Reusable rockets are going to change space travel. Starlink is going to change the internet, right? This is just a factual reality. So people should be encouraged to be like, okay, what do I think about this? Do I think this is good or do I think this is bad? Right. And one of the important things that everybody should do is voice that, like actually come out and be like, yo, this is what I think about it. And try our best to not be sensationalist about it. I fail at that sometimes. I felt about on that probably on this podcast when I was losing my mind on Doge, right? Like that. But it's the only way to navigate this change is by trying to look at everything honestly and just trying our best to be as close to our real feelings as possible and the reality that we see as possible, and then voicing that, right? And yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And also, you know, I try, it's not always easy, I try to really stay with the truth, because there's so much conspiracy out there. There's so much, you know, additional information that you actually don't need with it, and combing through it and really getting to the point
so
of it.
So hard.
It is. It really is. There's so, it really, really takes. That's why I was so happy about that Wall Street Journal article, because it was really to the point. It explained exactly the facts. If you break it down to the facts, it gets much easier. First of all, you're not afraid anymore. You know, you just have the facts, and then you can make up your opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so fun having you, Alexandra.
Thank you. Love it.
Yeah. Man.
How is dad's life? You didn't tell me. Dad's life.
It's awesome. It's truly the most unbelievable thing that I've ever experienced. It has transformed me in a way that, you know, one of the things that I've struggled with in the past is really truly understanding who I am, what I'm about, what I want to do, what are the things that I'm good at, what are the things that I'm bad at, what are the things that need improvement. Like it having a child makes everything so much better. And it helps you really, truly understand what is important.
Clear,
and
right?
The amount of clarity. And that clarity brings a lot of discomfort, too. Like, the clarity brings a lot of discomfort.
Oh, yeah,
That is like, yeah. And so, like, trying to work through that while trying to raise a child, while taking care of your wife, you know, she's going through an incredible journey. That's the hardest thing I've ever seen anybody. Like, I don't think people talk about how hard being a mother is. I don't think people talk enough about that.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And I have to say, it gets better with the subsequent children. So at five, it gets really easy.
Okay.
But women are really a miracle, I have to say. Women are miracle and strong.
They really are.
Strong things.
Yeah. And then when you come to Austin, please let me know, because I'd love to introduce you to the little one. Yeah.
I love that.
Where can people find you, Alexandra?
So Tesla Boomer Mama on X, that's actually my main outlet. I'm also on other social media, but not in the Tesla world. And I've completely given up actually on YouTube, because my YouTube channel, so much hate comment, and I stopped the comments and I gave up on that. So I'm on X. That is it. That's where you find me.
Okay. There you go. Tesla Boomer Mama on X. Go check out the wonderful Alexandra Merz. The best. And record.